Hi and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro and try to make sense of markets, and of course they make sense because interest rates were down. My friends, thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and I have got inflation on my mind. Is it possible we have now seen peak inflation? It just seems like, was it last week or maybe a couple weeks ago, we were talking about how the Fed was stuck in a liquidity trap, and it just so appears that perhaps that may be the case after all. Now, some people might think that, hey, well, you were probably really worried last night about the CPI. Bond futures were headed down, and man, the market was all primed up to just tank bonds when the CPI shot up. Because, you know, what's the broad view here is the money supply is high. It's just bullish, right? We're bull money supply. You got to be bullish on that. That's going to lead to inflation. But yet, here we are, month away from this big pull in the money supply, no inflation. So yes, we're renting the CPI king for the day because we're stuck in a liquidity trap. And when you're stuck in a liquidity trap, things that should work don't work the way they're supposed to. Now, you know, you could look at the CPI and say, well, energy is a big weight, right? And we could go over and look at crude and say, why isn't this higher? Where's crude oil here? I mean, gee, this really should be pricing into the CPI, and it hasn't. But another factor, my friends, is that rents have gone down. And you could say, well, you kind of got lucky. Rents are going to head back up soon. Maybe so. But there's two other factors that we're going to talk about today as we go through the economic data that I think people aren't paying attention to. One is the dollar, and two is the liquidity trap. And when you add those additional factors in, you know, you start to wonder why. I mean, how come Japan can't get inflation? How come Europe can't get inflation? Yet everyone thinks the U.S. is, because we're in the same boat. We're doing the same things, and you get the same results. All right, let's take a look at the economic data, and then we'll, as we get into the CPI on today's data, we will cover that. I've got some charts up here for us to go through. Because again, even the CPI experts are baffled. How could this report be so mediocre? Where is inflation going to come from? Let's go back to Tuesday. We've got German exports and imports. Exports up 0.01% month over month. Imports down 0.1%. Look at the month before, you know, in November, plus 2.3 on exports, plus 5.4 on imports. So you can really see the German economy slowing down here. Now, the factory PMI still look good, but you can see the economy in terms of imports and exports are slowing down. And that's one great place to look and see what is going on with an economy. We've got the National Federation of Independent Business, Small Business Optimism Index. And this is kind of neat because everyone thinks that, you know, everyone is super bullish on things. And when you stretch this back a little bit, you can find out that, well, businesses aren't that optimistic. In fact, here, down here at 90.9, when the index is currently at 95, this was the bottom of the pandemic. So small businesses, they're really not that optimistic. In fact, their optimism is waning and heading lower, as you can see, which is not a positive sign at all. Let's take a look at Redbook weekly retail sales. Now, I've been talking about how, you know, we're looking at demand destruction. You know, everyone's talking about this, you know, pent-up demand, right? So what you'd be thinking is, you look at this data, you know, where's the problem? Because what did we see in the factory surveys, the PMIs recently? We saw, you know, order backlogs, new orders are up, and these big, you know, prices paid up. Everything's kind of, you know, really high, as if there's all this demand because the, you know, the trucks leaving the factory are backlogged due to the pandemic. They just can't get stuff and out to the consumers, and the ships are backlogged at port, and all these people have money, right? They're running, want to run down to the store and spend it. So the question I want you to ask as we go through the retail sales data here is the problem that consumers can't get what they want, so they're going to the store and they're, you know, they have their money and what they want to buy is not there? Or they not want to buy, and we're facing a demand issue, which I think is a demand issue, but a lot of people disagree with that. But look at this, month over month, this is from last week, minus 2.5% on same store weekly retail sales. And that is worse than the week before, minus 1.6. How about the year over year trend? We were at a pretty nice hot 4.4, not super hot, but yeah, maybe warm, lukewarm, to 0.7. So if we look at this year over year report, you know, what do you see is a massive slowdown in retail sales. I mean, in fact, it's so slow, you're going back to 2017. So is this right here the recent stimulus check? Is this gone, right? This is the holiday season, stimulus checks, and is it over? I mean, you know, you have to be thinking, look at all these people over, you know, about 850,000 people have lost their jobs per week for the last 4 weeks, new claims. So is this pent-up demand or is this lack of demand? You be the judge. We've got the job openings and labor turnover survey. I'm not a huge fan of this. It's very lagged and you could somewhat predict where it's going to be. It just shows total job openings in December was largely unchanged between November and October. But with the number of jobs being lost recently, well, you would likely expect that in January, this number is going to be down. So it's just telling you there are jobs out there, or there were jobs in December, and there probably are less now. The three-year note auction went off fairly well, did not really move the markets at all after it. I mean, although bond prices did go down later in the day, it was not as a result of the auction. We're not going to look at that in detail, not a whole lot to see. We'll look at today's 10-year for sure. Producer prices coming out of Japan, you know, month over month are up 0.4%. But year over year, so this is, you know, you see this exporting of deflation. It's went from -2 to -1.6. Yeah, slightly better, but not enough to say there's a major trend change. How about consumer prices in China? Now, you know, many of you know that I think there's going to be a devaluation of currency by China to create and, you know, help boost inflation. Look over the month over month, it was up 1%, but the year over year went from positive, so inflationary at a whopping 0.2 to deflationary at, again, a not a big number, but -0.3. Producer prices leaving the factory in China went from deflationary at -0.4 to inflationary at -0.3. You would think there'd be a direct correlation perhaps to the US CPI based on the China PPI. That's not the case. I've tried to run that comparison and really not come up with a conclusive answer. Looks like inflation in Germany went from -0.3% with deflationary to +1.0. So seeing a little inflation in Germany. Mortgage applications down 4%. This number is way hot, so or high, so there's not much to see there. Let's get into today's data. So the consumer price index missed expectations and it was 1.3% last month. So, you know, this is inflation. So a lot of people are like, well, Steve, you don't see inflation. No, I see what we have is a disinflationary trend that is going to ultimately end in deflation. That's the view is, you know, if you look back to 2008 and 2009, we saw deflation. People say this can't happen again. And it briefly happened in 2015. My view is it's going to happen again. And the long view is, well, when you see this downward trend, it's disinflation. It means the economy is creating less inflation. Now this trend looks like it's possibly peaked here. Could it have peaked? Well, one of the great things to look at is, and we talked about this, is the ISM Prices Paid Index. This is a good barometer of a peak in inflation and a bottom in bond prices or a peak in interest rates as well. It's usually accurate within a matter of months. So is the ISM Manufacturing PMI, courtesy of Brent Johnson of Santiago Capital, who graciously helps out with charts when I can't run them because I don't have Bloomberg Terminal and I don't want one. But anyways, you can see here that the ISM factory day is peaking too. Usually this is within 3 months of a market crash. It peaks, so the last peak was in December, also signifies potential peak in interest rates and inflation. So we look at, you know, the consumer price index, and yes, it's at 1.4, just under 1.4, 1.37, so there's your rounding up. But one of the factors I don't think people really look at is the dollar. So I've got the trade weighted dollar here. And you'll notice in January it started to go up. And if you're having trouble seeing that, we'll just go to a dollar chart that I previously had ready. Where's the dollar? Here it is. And you can see here early January on the 6th, that was a bob. Now, maybe it's not the bottom. That's a discussion for perhaps the chart show or later if we have time. But nevertheless, there was a bottom in January in the dollar rally. Well, that would tell us, due to this relationship with the CPI, that perhaps that would put downward pressure against some of the rising components of the CBI. Now, if you say, well, I don't really see it, well, let's just invert the dollar. And here you can see, invert the CPI. What did I do? Yeah, I inverted the CPI. So if you invert the CPI, you see the rising dollar puts downward pressure on the CPI as it starts to go up. And so, So here you can see it right here, dollar rising, and that puts downward pressure on the CPI shown inverted. And we start inverting things, it kind of can get a little weird, right? Let's take a look at the money multiplier, which is the M2 money supply divided by the monetary base. And you can see the money multiplier is pushing down too. And so that's telling us that the likely destination for the consumer price index, given just the dollar and the money multiplier, is lower. So even though, you know, energy was up, you can see all these pressures pushing back against the CPI. Of course, a lot of people believe that rents are going to head up and that will fix that, but you can't ignore these external factors. Core CPI excluding food and energy, month over month up 0, year over year, disinflationary from 1.6 to 1.4. Let's look at the core and see how it looks a little bit different. See how it's headed down? Where do you think the rest of this thing is going to head when food and energy prices start to peak or roll over? Real, whenever time you see real, think inflation adjusted earnings were up 0.8%. That's pretty good compared to last month, the 0.4. And we'll get into crude inventories. Now I have a special announcement for you on this as we get into it. Tracy Shutart, who you know as @ChaiGirl on Twitter, oil crude oil guru, knows everything about this, just messaged me before the show and has given me free access to her report from Hedge Fund Telemetry. So if you've not heard of her, not heard of Hedge Fund Telemetry, check them out. They're a great service. So I said, hey, I really need your help going through these reports. She goes, well, I write about it every week. Now you've got everything you need. So that's totally awesome. I haven't read it yet, but I do plan on doing a show on how to look at the EIA details, maybe a special educational show at some point to help you understand this better. But let's go through and look at what we saw today. You know, the market really liked this. Crude oil down, inventory is down 6.6%. 4.4 million barrels. And let's take a look at what that did to crude, because everyone's bullish on crude, but remember there's likely to be a demand issue at some point, and there's likely also to be a dollar rally. So here you see the report, crude oil's headed lower, report sent it up, and then it kind of faded that rally. How about the one I'm really interested in? Gasoline inventories up 4.259 million barrels. Now this is a problem. And you can go to the EIA website and look at this, but I pulled just, the last, say, 6 years here. And what you can see is every time in early to mid-February, you see a peak in gasoline inventories and they roll down. And here you can see in 2017, it did that too. 2018 is doing that as well. 2019, you see, right, consistently, it builds over the holiday and then starts to roll over in February. So here it is again, rolling down, and then you get into the pandemic. So it bounces back, no surprise. But look at this trend. This trend is rising. It's not peaking. It's not flattening. It's not lowering. It's rising. And this is something that, I look for as a demand issue. So keep an eye on that every week. It's on Wednesday. Next week will be on Thursday due to the markets being closed on Monday. Distilled stocks. Think of this as jet fuel down 1.7 million barrels. Now we had the 10-year note auction today, and you could almost sense based on the markets that it was going to be, well, a terrible report. But was it? Not at all. It was actually a really strong report. You have to go back to November to find the other largest treasury auction of its size. So this was $41 billion, tied for the highest ever. And you will notice, look at the low yield, 0.08%. Now, this doesn't mean anyone received these notes at 0.08%. It means people bid 0.08%. Now, why would you bid 0.08% on a 10-year note? Because you wanted to make sure you got it. Because the way they allocate this is from the low yield all the way up until what's referred to as stops out, at what yield the bids are done. So you go from $41 billion and you fill those orders based on the lowest bid. So somebody, and we've seen this consistently, is bidding near 0% on 10-year notes because they want them. That's where you see that demand in terms of where interest rates are headed. Is you can look, one way is you can look at the low yield here. Now, in terms of the auction, it actually was probably a bit better than decent compared to the November auction. And you're kind of wondering why we're talking about November again. It was $41 billion. The next two auctions were at $38 billion. So I want to look back and see what the market pulse is since November. And we see indirect bidders, it took more. Direct bidders took a little bit more than November, leaving dealers with more than they've got, a little bit more than the last couple of months, but less, I believe, than November. And what did we see in the bond market? As a result, let's go out here to 10-year treasury yields. We'll zoom out a little bit, and you can see big move down throughout the day. Shortly after the auction, yields continue to fall. We see that even in the 30-year, which is now just getting close to breaking 1.9, which would likely send it quickly moving back down to 1.7%. So a great auction there. I mean, not super stellar, but given the size, I mean, it's the best auction at $41 billion we've ever had. And people often say that they don't see the speculation in this market. This chart was floating around Twitter today from B of A Research Investment Committee and Bloomberg. It's the U.S. call option volume has doubled since the pandemic. And you can really see that, you know, people aren't buying stocks, they're speculating on stocks. And that's what's driving this. The question that will happen at some point is what goes on when this structure breaks down and falls apart? This whole market is in deep, deep trouble. Let's take a look at some charts since we got a few extra minutes. I want to look at the dollar, of course, because I'm very interested in the dollar. I've always said that the bonds will lead the dollar higher. History shows that usually it's the dollar that leads bonds higher at this stage. But hey, maybe we'll be right about that. You know, we got the call on the liquidity trap. Next, let's see if we can get the call on the market peaking here. That would be pretty interesting based on the feedback I got from Monday's video. Anyways, you can see the dollar bounced up here. I thought it was going to get up to 92, as we talked about on the chart shows, or at least the 100-day moving average. It didn't. It came back down, and this is positive. It's finding support on top of the supply zone, right below its 100-day moving average. So if it firms up here, then there you're going to see another attempt to break this high at 91.55, probably a shot at 92. The equity markets aren't expecting that. How about TLT? Nice rally today on fairly low volume. So, you know, these low volume moves are starting to tell you that the sellers are done. Does this mean that this is a high conviction move yet? Not even close. We've got a ways to go before we're ready to make that call. Let's take a look at gold miners. You know, still can't get over their 50-day moving average. I still see downward move from here. Where the equity markets go, well, I think only time will tell. But the likely direction in my book for the overvalued equity market is lower. Well, thanks for being fans. Be sure, if you're not a subscriber, come back, join us again. I'd love to have you. Be sure to subscribe. And with that, I will see you on Friday for the macro show. I'm getting ready to record an interview with Tom from Palisade Radio. I don't know when it'll air, but we're gonna record that this afternoon. So I'm looking forward to that. Got another interview for you with someone else, with Luke on Friday. I forget who he's with, but we're looking forward to that. And then I got another one we're going to get next week or two. On Monday, because market's a holiday, I'm thinking about coming in on the weekend and recording a macro thesis update. A lot of you have been asking for that, so probably going to shoot for that. And then some of you have said, hey, will you do a show on your kind of multiple exit strategies? That's on the list too. We'll get to that as well. Anyways, thanks for being fans. I will see you on Friday. Bye now. The content of this video provides educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. Materials not to be construed as recognition or solicitation by our selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.